Welcome back to the Rust is Gold Racing Podcast here at Rust is Gold Coffee Shop.
I'm Stephen Phoenix Mays. I'm here with Tyson Hollywood Garcia and Chris Sparky Franco.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back, Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too, triumphing and knowing what you want to do. My boys are on Ducatis, happy now all the while. Yeah, these are rockers, it's their style.
So let's ride.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Just trying to get used to going back to my old bike after that ride.
Yeah, you had an interesting weekend after the DGR this past weekend, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Not only that, but I think also coming down from such a big weekend, right? We had the Americano Fest on Friday where we had some musicians come in, and then we had the DGR event on Sunday with over 90 plus riders. It's kind of hard to go back to like work on a regular day after so much buildup and steam.
Definitely. You know? It kind of felt like you worked all week and then you kept working.
Right, yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah, and we didn't just have, I mean, we had, what, 2 weekends before was the DCR rally?
Duke City Rockers.
And then we had 1 weekend off and then got ready for the Americana Music, which, you know, we haven't talked about that a whole lot on this podcast, but that's not an open mic, but kind of a singer-songwriter, small group music performance we do on Friday nights here at the coffee shop. And that was part of, you know, one of the things that you've always wanted to do is have music here a lot, because we love music, right? Music and motorcycles.
Oh, definitely.
And coffee. So yeah. What do you think of those nights, man?
They're great. I mean, for some reason the acoustics works in this coffee shop, and the band that we had was a Screen Door Slammers coming from Austin, and they're a cool couple, singer-songwriter couple. And they've been touring a lot, and they, you know, it's the wife does mandolin and guitar, and the husband does guitar, and they do singer-songwriter stuff. Yes. And it just kind of fits with the environment and the aesthetic, and just a real cool, laid-back, and you know, environment and atmosphere. And for a lot of people that don't want to go out drinking or put up with a huge crowd, it was kind of a cool event for those kind of people.
Yeah. So they're married. I didn't realize
that. Yeah, they're married with a kid.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
Touring couple, which is cool.
So they came through, like, was it a month ago?
They did. It was, it was closer to our opening. So wasn't that, like, closer
like
to
June, I guess.
June, July?
And then they were on a tour? Is that right?
So basically, they almost tour year-round.
Wow.
So they're from Austin. They pack up their car, and they just kind of hit stop to stop as much as they can, and they're pretty much like DIY do-it-yourself touring. They do all their own booking and all that kind of stuff. They're not paying anybody out, and I don't know, I'm kind of envious. Like, you know, a singer-songwriter couple, they can stay together and stay happy and play music and make a living off that.
Yeah, because they contacted us when they were on their way back from the Northwest. I think they were like in Oregon,
Portland,
and they were coming back and they wanted to stop in, and it kind of timing just kind of worked out. But it's cool, man. The feedback from people is awesome. They're like, you know, it's something I can go listen to and like drink some coffee and have light conversation, but I still got a great music vibe going on without, like you said, all of the craziness of being downtown with all the drunk college kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, drunk college kids, where's that? That was fun.
Well, you're still a kid.
I wasn't the drunk college kid. I was the guy on the ambulance, the EMT that picked the drunk college kids up.
That sounds even worse.
That was fun. you tell them, you pull them into the hospital, you say, hey, by the way, it's that nurse's birthday, you should sing to them. And sometimes they would. And
okay.
It was great in the middle of the night. You have all the nurses just giggling to themselves.
Yeah, but you know.
See, that was my thought. When I think of drunk college kids, that's what I think of.
But you're a kid still.
Not really.
Sparky's the youngest one out of all of us. And, you know, when you get to be my age, I'm the oldest one. So when you get to be my age, you just kind of want to come and sit down in a nice comfy couch and have a coffee and listen to some music. You don't need the guy next to you puking, you know, trying to hit on his friend's girlfriend, you know, those
talking
days.
Talking loud in the middle of the show.
Right, exactly. Those days are way over for me.
Those days were over for me when I was in college as a kid.
As a kid.
Yeah, but you're a jarhead, man.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't like anybody.
For that crap.
We hate everyone, man.
That's. I just wanted to laugh because, you know, from our last podcast with Scott Cloninger over at Triumph Albuquerque, All he did was pick on you about being a Marine.
He just rests. That's what you gotta do, man. You know, those Army guys are envious. I hate to say it, but, you know, they just like to be a little envious. But, hey, I appreciate him all the same.
Hey, my dad was 101st Airborne Army.
Yeah, so, I can respect that.
You gotta be careful.
Vietnam era, I definitely respect that.
That's right.
But there's only a few Marines, let me tell you that. So today we're going to be talking about the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, just kind of move it along. We also got to demo three bikes from Scott from Triumph, which I got to give my hats off to. Very cool of him to just give us three bikes to take for a day or two.
Yeah.
Some of us took those bikes a little bit further than others, but...
I know the first time for the DCR rally, I took the Thruxton as far as I could take it.
Yeah.
And I know now for DGR, you took the Bonneville as far as you could take it.
You know, we were in state lines. Scott, if you're listening, don't check the odometer.
You were still in the county. You're still good.
Was he?
Pushing
was
it.
He still in the county?
Pushing
no,
the county.
I don't know, maybe.
You may have left the county.
Depends. Altitude could be,
that's
could
true.
Be tricky. But Steve was on the Bobber. Franco got the Thruxton, and I got the Bonnie, and we're going to be talking about that, so... DGR event, what did you guys think?
DGR was cool, man. You know, this was my first year, and I've seen it online, and I know all of the big clubs do it, like Venice Vintage Motorcycle Club does it, and you know, the Steel City Rockers in Pittsburgh, but it's a global thing, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of people I follow on Instagram, you know, a lot of the cafe riders and women and men in like Mexico and Spain and Italy and UK,
Australia.
They all get into it, you know, and it's, you guys know, it's the whole Dapper thing. For those of you that don't know anything about the DGR, the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, the idea is you get dressed up as dapper as you can, and then you do the ride, you raise some money for men's health,
prostate cancer,
suicide prevention. And you've done it before, right?
Yeah, this is my fourth one. And we started off at PJ's on Central, the old Triumph dealership. And, you know, initially it was pretty small. I think that was the first year, it was about 4 years ago when we first did this. I think we had maybe 50 riders, and then we bumped up to 60 the next year and 70, and then kind of dropped down. And this was the biggest one I'd seen. I think we had 110 registered, and we had about 80 that showed up to the coffee shop and made the ride. And from talking to Brian, who was one of the other co-sponsors with us, I think we raised about 9,300, close to that.
Was that the final tally?
Yeah, and he said that actually today we talked, and he came in for a coffee, and he said the tally mark is still going up.
Yeah.
By, you know, small amounts, but it keeps raising.
Oh, wow.
So I think what happens is DGR, Distinguished Gentleman hosts, they have to kind of keep up with the tally and that registering the money and whatnot. So we're close to like 9,300, which is great.
That's
for
amazing.
New Mexico.
Yeah.
Albuquerque, definitely. Especially. I don't think we've ever raised that kind of money.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I did. I think when we first moved up here, I did DGR. So it was 3 years ago.
You're on the Ural, right?
Yeah, we're on the Ural. We had Sealy, my dog, in the sidecar with a little bow tie and some doggles. And he had fun.
Yeah.
Did Deanna do it with you that year?
Yeah, Deanna rode the Ural. I forget what I rode. I rode one of the many different bikes I've ever had. But no, she wanted to do it again, but the Harley wasn't quite ready. So next year we'll definitely do it.
Yeah.
And that's the other cool thing too, is you see all different age groups, right? We saw some younger kids, a lot of older men that go. We also saw a lot of women riders this time, which is really cool. I would say probably about maybe quarter to half of the people that were there were women riders.
Definitely.
You know, and all different kind of styles of bikes. They tried to keep it, initially I know they were trying to keep it Triumph kind of specific or vintage specific, because it gives a good aesthetic and look, as you guys can both agree.
Yeah.
But I think they kind of started to open it up, because again, when you're looking at charity, it's about raising money.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it doesn't matter what bike you ride.
Right, right. The cause is the cause.
It was definitely vintage or modern classic leaning, you know. So it stayed within that aesthetic for sure. I do know that even today I looked, which is what, 4 days after the ride, right?
Yeah.
Today's Thursday.
Sunday.
I had a few more donations.
Oh, really?
I had set it kind of low. I had set it at 250 because I didn't know. And on Sunday, the day of the ride, it was like at 190, and then a couple more donations came in. So big thanks to everybody that donated to us and sponsored it, because that's it's big, especially like Tyson said, for New Mexico, you know, it's hard to get people motivated to do things like that and to dress up. Hard to get people to dress up in the bow tie and the vest and, you know.
I don't know, man. I think that's one of the draws, right?
No, it is definitely the draw. But for New Mexico, I mean, you know, UK, Europe, you know, that's an easy thing, you know.
Yeah, New Mexico dress up is a bolo tie, Levi's or Wranglers,
and maybe boots.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
Right. With maybe a sport coat on top.
And I didn't see one turquoise bow tie.
Bolo?
Bolo or bow tie.
No, I didn't either.
You know, I didn't
actually
either.
Steve was rocking the bow tie. He might have been the only guy.
I rocked a bow. No, there was several bow ties, but I tied my own bow tie. I was pretty proud of
multiple
impressive
attempts and multiple
it took
people.
Me
do, you
morning,
do you know how to do this?
Yeah, Chris met me at the house, and the first I opened the door, I didn't even say hi. I was like, can you tie a bow tie?
Nope.
And no.
The answer is no. No bow tie. You can do a real nice tie.
Yeah, but Tyson, you were saying Scott let us take out a few demo bikes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I know you like the bike you rode, but I think Chris rode the coolest bike.
You think the Thruxton was it?
Yeah.
Oh, Thruxton, it's just clean. Clean, clean bike. I just love the way it looks. I don't know. I don't think I fit on it as well as Steve fit on that bobber. Like I said, man, that bobber, you with those mini ape hangers, that little brown style seat, had we had like a rolled up Serape on the front, perfect. It would have been the New Mexico bike.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it was.
Because
been.
You know how much I just don't like that style of bike.
I don't think any of us
okay,
do.
Okay, so just to give our listeners some reference here, Scott, who owns Triumph Albuquerque, basically wanted to get some pictures of his new promo bikes that Triumph is putting out, and he offered to let us borrow and use three of his bikes so we can get some good photos and kind of lead the pack on the event. And when he asked us what bikes did we want to take, I jumped at it right away, and I said, I'll take the Bonneville.
Yeah.
I'll take the Bonneville right away because it looks awesome. You said the Cup,
yeah, they
right?
had this yellow street Cup.
And he got the Thruxton, and then the only bike left over was the bobber, which Steve reluctantly took.
Well, and you have to paint the picture, too. It wasn't just the bobber with the flat bars. It had these mini ape hangers, this maroon tank,
right.
and this brown little seat. That,
like a tooled leather, hard leather seat.
Yep, exactly. That was
solo
just tiny.
Seat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, tell us about the bike, though, man.
Well, let me start by saying first, I got to ride the Thruxton for the DCR rally, so I was psyched. You know, I didn't want to overstay my welcome with Scott. You know, the gratitude, Scott, so much for letting us do that. I didn't want to make a big thing about riding the bobber, but I know Tyson like immediately was like, I'll take the Bonneville. He already knew. So anyway, we showed up to get our bikes Saturday before DGR, right?
Exactly.
And I'm thinking, okay, it's the bobber. You know, all right. You know, it's semi cool looking. Chris and I walk in, and there's the bobber parked there with the mini ape hangers, and I'm like, gosh, I hope it's not that one.
And you're thinking this in your head, right?
Yeah. No, I think I literally told Chris. I said, God, I hope it's not that one. And Chris was like, no, he's got like three more in there. I'm like, okay, cool.
It's not going to be that one.
So we go in, and after a little bit of talking, you know, everybody, Scott starts handing off the keys and gives me the keys to the bobber, and I'm like, so which one is it? And he's like, oh, it's that one out there. It's the one with the mini ape hangers.
And I wish your reaction was just that nice. No, you froze. Your eyes got big. That one? You're kidding me. Really?
I know. I feel really bad because I was like, I thought he was joking with me. I thought he was just kind of pulling my leg. And I was like, seriously? And he's like, no, that's it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, at least he feels your pain. He hates those bars too.
That's true.
So it wasn't a slap in the
and
face.
I talked to him about it. He doesn't actually like that ride. He said he rode it before. And he lasted maybe an hour on it.
On that bike?
Exactly. That same exact bike. And it is a seat. I think the bike
is brutal.
And I think it could be a smooth ride. I just think the seat position and what they put on there.
Yeah.
So
it's a weird setup. And honestly, I like the bike. Like, I like the bike. Powerful. Super powerful. It was a 1200, you know. Lots of horsepower. It had some get up and go. The bars, surprisingly, not as uncomfortable as I thought they were going to be. Personally, I've never really ridden anything like that. I came up on dirt bikes, cafe bikes, street bikes. You know what I mean? I'm not used to bars that are at my shoulder level. But it was not bad. It was fairly comfortable. The killer was the seat. The seat, you know, it's adjustable. You can move it back and forth. And it's still, at its furthest point back for me, it was still too close. I couldn't stretch my legs out enough to to feel comfortable. But the bike itself is amazing. You know, it sounds beautiful. Just the exhaust on it was just, it was amazing sound. And it was a fun ride. I'd always wanted to ride that bike since they came out, just because it was kind of a cool throwback thing that that Triumph came out with.
And they released those last year or the year before?
It's 2016, I think, right?
Okay, so close to 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I thought they were cool when they came out, and you know, just out of curiosity, I always wondered what it would be like to ride one. So I really appreciate the opportunity to ride it, and it's a good bike. You know, runs beautiful, lots of power. I think for somebody who's into that style of bike, it would be a lot of fun. I think I don't like the bars. You know, there's no way I could ride that with the bars.
Which is surprising. I mean, if you're going to demo a bike and have a bike out there to demo, mm-hmm. I think you'd want to put somebody on the most comfortable position.
Probably, right? Yeah, the stock bars.
Yeah.
Those are stock, by the way.
Are those stock? I thought those were aftermarket.
No, it'll come in that setup and the low bars.
Because the three bikes, the other three bobbers that he had in there were all kind of like the straight bar.
Right. Like drag bars.
Drag bar, yeah.
Yeah. So all in all, you know, I liked the bike. I think it was cool. I just didn't like the setup. And then I got everybody lost on the DGR ride. So that made it
easy. Well, I don't know where we're going. Of course, I'm doing sweep, so I'm trying to catch everybody. And I look, did we get lost? I lose the group? And no, sure
it's
enough.
It's hard to get lost in Old Town, isn't it?
I mean,
he took a right instead of a left down the mountain.
I took a right in Albuquerque, right? Isn't that the joke?
Yeah, it is.
But anyway.
What about the power? Because I rode the bobber during the coffee meetup, and I thought the power was great, but it was the gearing felt off for me.
It was a little rough shifting for me. I thought horsepower was amazing. I think it's like, what did we say, 77 horsepower on that thing on the 1200?
Well, which I don't know about the bobber, but on the Truxton it's 97.
Yeah, no, it was like 77 on the bobber. It was like it had some get up,
huh?
Yeah. I thought the power was great. You know, after riding the Thruxton for the rally and feeling that positioning.
Definitely very sporty.
Yeah. That and then the sport mode.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ooh, wow, that's
unbelievable.
Cool, huh? Very cool.
You know, I've never really been a huge Triumph guy, you know. I mean, ironically, that was like the first vintage bike I ever had was a Triumph, and it wasn't running, and I told Tyson the story, I wish I hadn't gotten rid of it. It was a 76 Tiger was somebody had left in a house that I was renting. It was in the backyard. I wasn't really into vintage bikes then. I was riding street bikes, and man, now I could kick myself for selling that. You know, it was titled, and it was just there.
Yeah, because I think that's the one Andy DeLo has been just trying to find one.
Oh, it's so hard to find. They're so expensive.
And that's the one he's been wanting.
Yeah. So from that point, I've never really been into Triumphs, which is funny, though, because actually you and I have talked about this, Tyson. When you bought your Thruxton, you bought it in Colorado Springs, right? And it was on Craigslist. It was red.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at that bike at the same time. And I was going to make an offer on it and go up there. And then it wasn't listed anymore. I never thought anything of it again until Tyson and I started talking about it years later.
Right.
And Tyson had bought it.
Oh, wow.
But you can't, I mean, the bike looks completely different. Yeah. It doesn't even look like the
now
same bike.
Now it's pink, and he put real ape hangers on it.
Real ape hangers, four controls on it. It looks pretty amazing.
But, and a metal seat.
Metal seat on it. So you were looking at my Thruxton, and it looks completely different now. But that was the first version of the Thruxton.
Yeah.
And the next version that they reintroduced was the one that you're on this time.
Yeah, the Thruxton 1200. And yeah, and I've always wanted one of those 900 Thruxtons, your Thruxton. So I've always eyeballed them. I've always loved the way they looked. But yeah, seeing this one, this new generation of Triumph bikes, they're just so refined looking. They almost look like little pieces of art. It's the brushed metal of the engine cases, everything looks just perfect.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine that as almost a mechanical thing, because everything is just so clean and done upright. And that's something I've noticed between the old 900s and the new 1200s, that it's the same bike, but it's completely different.
You think so?
I think so, because the 900s, the older ones, the air-cooled, they still have that vintage bike look.
Well, the tank resembles the old Bonneville tank, right?
Yeah, the round tank, whereas this new one is almost like a Benelli Mojave tank. Wide at the front, but tapers down the back a little bit longer. But no, overall, great bike to ride. I think the bike with the biggest displacement, or the only other 1200 I've ridden, has been a Harley 1200. And that's my wife's, her 1988, so it doesn't have much power. And then I had a 2008 Harley-Davidson XR1200, which I don't remember the horsepower on that thing, but it was all right, but it was just too top heavy. It wasn't my cup of tea. I didn't really like it. But to jump from my Moto Guzzi, which only has 67 horsepower, and jumping on this brand new Thruxton that's fuel injected, just everything's all electronic, just ABS and traction control, going from my Guzzi to that, it was two completely different bikes. I felt like I was on a sport bike. It was amazing.
Is that the newest bike you've ridden in a while?
Yeah,
that Thruxton?
Yeah. Yeah.
It definitely feels like that because it does have the sport mode.
Yep.
Right.
The sport mode was unbelievable. I took it home, I never even bothered to look until I saw that button that said mode. And I pushed it and noticed it could go on sport. And I looked at my wife and said, I'm gonna go for a ride, I'll be back. Went out to behind the volcanoes or just a big old long stretch of road. And was riding it just in road mode, and I slowed down, put it into sport mode, and took off from there. Brought up the front wheel completely unintentionally. And after that, going back into road mode, it just feels, that bike feels constrained. You
does it?
It has so much more power in sport mode, it's unbelievable.
Which is, I think, is a cool aspect, which a lot of these newer bikes are using. For someone that wants to ride that bike who's not used to that kind of power, the regular mode is fine.
Oh, yeah.
Once you start to ease into that bike, right, and you get more comfortable with it, then you can throw it in the race mode and actually kind of push the limits if you want to.
It's absolutely fantastic.
When you put it in sport mode, does that disable like the traction control and everything?
No, traction control I think is still there.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not like a car. You don't necessarily want to spin those wheels. And that's something I noticed, the traction control is fantastic to have. I left a subdivision, was turning onto Unser, into one of the main streets, and kind of gunned it, and I forgot I left it in sport mode, so it started to spin that tire. And I lost that back end for a half a second, if that, but the traction control kicked in, slowed me down, and I never felt like I lost control of that bike. Mm. I could feel the back tire start to slide, and then suddenly had grip again.
So can you spin the rear wheel?
I have no idea, I didn't try.
Huh,
I wonder. On my bike.
I'm sure you can.
I'm sure you can.
In the sport mode, I mean, I bet you it's gotta be what it's for.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think the cool thing I like about that bike, and again, I only got to ride it for maybe an hour, is like you said, it has that vintage kind of look, which Triumph, I think, does better than anybody else in
definitely
the market.
Except for the BMW R9T.
Okay. Well, again.
No, because that's a monoshock, it doesn't quite look like a vintage bike anymore.
I don't think the BMWs look vintage at all.
No, but they do look like a TT race bike.
They do look like a TT, right.
That's for sure.
But aside from the tank.
You're right.
And whatever.
There is a difference between like
classic
vintage look and
exactly
race bike
and
look.
I think,
you're right.
Again, Triumph does classic better than anybody.
Definitely.
But they were able to take what they had done with the original 900 Thrux and fix all those little things that they should have, right? The new front end. Dual disc brakes, the brushed aluminum looks great. They kind of went to like a clip-on, which I think is kind of, for myself, I don't like that riding position as much, but it just looks great, and I think they fixed all those little things. If you're
beautiful
into the kind of like the racing kind of feel.
Oh, definitely.
It's a great bike. I'm definitely Triumph is doing it right as far as the look and the performance
right
for that kind of bike, for sure. Nobody else is doing it, right? I mean...
No. Think.
Well, I guess the other thing too is the price breakdown. So I think the Bobber is starting off like around 12,000, and then the Triumph Thruxton is now listing close to like 14,000 to 15,000.
Well, that's for the RR. The one,
yeah, the RR.
This one that I rode was the Thruxton. It's around 13.
Which is still,
higher than they first intro,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Weren't they like eight when they came?
I think they were closer to like 8, 9, 10. So, you are talking, I mean, I guess if you're looking at, like, power and CCs, you are paying for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, I'll tell you what, if I were to buy another bike or a new bike, it would definitely be that Thruxton.
You think so?
It's fantastic. If I were to get a brand new bike.
Steve, what about you?
I think I would say surprisingly.
Yeah, he definitely would like the Bobber. He loves those ape hangers.
Never going to live this down.
No, you're not.
And there's photographic evidence, too.
That's Sarah got a ton of photos of you on that Bobber, man.
You know what? I'm running with it. I'm not afraid. I like it. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to put ape hangers on my BMW.
You're going to do a bobber.
That'll look horrible.
But your question was, yeah, I think so. I think I would. I think for a new bike, if I was to put down money on something, it would probably be a Thruxton.
Definitely. And Triumph has always impressed me. I had, for a very brief period of time, I had a 95 Thunderbird 900, the triple. And that bike, oh, I love it. It was a great bike. And just stuff happened, you know, bike's always the first thing to go, so that left. But Triumph definitely left an impression on me.
What was your issue with the throttle? I remember you were saying something.
On these new bikes, since everything's EFI, and just being the new generation of bikes, everything is, it's an aviation term, fly-by-wire. So rather than being cable controlled or anything like that, it's a digital input. So it's just electronic signals telling something to do this. And I guess they call it ride-by-wire. But rather than your throttle having a throttle cable that runs to, say, some butterfly valves that let more air in or less air in, it's, and I might be completely wrong about how Triumph does it, but it's just a wire, has a position sensor of where you are on your throttle, and it tells, I'm pretty sure, the injectors to add more fuel, less fuel. And that's how it controls it. I personally didn't like it, just, and not to say it didn't have good throttle response, it wasn't just a great ride, but because I couldn't feel where I was, if that makes any sense, in my wrist. I couldn't tell where I was,
but
just in the way of accelerating.
But you're coming from,
I'm coming from my
carbureted,
yeah,
usually a vintage kind of guy, which you definitely have to kind of, on a lot of bikes, you have to get on that throttle before you can actually engage.
And that's,
you
know, something, because I ride Moto Guzzi, an old Moto Guzzi. They, those Del Orto carbs are known for having just intensely strong springs. Mm-hmm. So actually, after dropping off that Thruxton and going back to my Guzzi and trying to ride there, I'm just like, whoa, what is this? Is heavy.
Yeah.
Right.
And but yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm used to holding the pressure. Whereas that Thruxton, you could be fully pinned or barely cracked open. It had the same amount of pressure on your wrist.
Which is good, I think, though, for newer riders.
Is the T100 the same way?
It is. All the, I think, as far as I know, all the newer bikes that are coming out, they're all on the wire system. And they also have the clutch assist, which means it's easier to, you know, clutch pull, less poundage for that clutch pull. So I think for, like, newer riders, again, me being a Triumph guy, I think what they're trying to do is cover all their bases. So they're looking at the new lineup of bikes and saying, how can we target the intro rider, the, you know, guy that's been riding for a couple years, and then how can we target the guys that have been riding for 20 plus years? What can we offer all these that's going to be sellable? And I think they did a great job of that.
Oh, definitely.
Well, you were riding the T100, right?
Right.
What did you think?
I was riding the Bonneville, the T100. And again, myself being a Triumph guy, the first time I saw that bike, it was the flat black. Again, it had the fork gaiters, which are these kind of like rubber gaiters that sit over the front forks. It had the Fox shocks on the back. It was all flat back, flat black rims. And when I first saw that bike, it reminded me of the Steve McQueen bike on the Great Escape. And it just brought back some really cool memories. So when I saw that bike, I was like, man, I gotta ride this thing. It has a little bit of like the cool factor, the Steve McQueen cool factor, along with like the rideability. So when I got on the bike, again, it being a newer bike, it's a 900, but it doesn't feel like my 900 Thruxton. You know, my Thruxton, I've done some things to it to kind of give it a little bit more horsepower. But for an intro rider that wants to get on a bike that looks cool and feels good and has good throttle response and handles well, that Bonneville, I think, would be a great bike. It handled great in the mountains. The turning was great. The only problem is that it's running mid-controls. And if you really want to take a corner, I noticed myself a couple times, used to being on rear sets, you know, you're taking a corner on rear sets, you have some clearance. Mid-controls on the Bonneville, you're taking a corner real tight. You're going to scrape if you know you're an advanced rider. So again, for the intro rider, I think the Bonneville is a perfect bike.
Yeah. Scott Tyson didn't scrape his pegs
didn't
at all.
I scraped boots, not pegs. And I think the price also kind of, that says that, right? So you can buy the Bonneville for about 10 grand. And then, you know, the Thruxton, you're starting at about 15. And then the Bobber is kind of in its own class at about 11.
Yeah.
So I think that's the market that they're trying to get to.
Well, definitely. I think it's funny that you guys are both kind of complaining about the forward sets or the mid sets, whereas I'm shorter than both of you guys. I have really short legs. I'm only 5'7". I'm not a very big man. And a lot of these new bikes, I can't flat foot. There's no way.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's very few bikes I can flat foot.
Okay, so the Threxton has rear sets. Or yes. Mid, yeah.
The Threxton has rear sets. It was comfortable. I can't flat foot that Threxton.
Couldn't do it?
Oh, no.
Wow.
I can flat foot the Bobber, and I can flat foot the Speedmaster. Those are the only two I can flat foot.
Hmm.
But I think this, I think the Bobber and the Speedmaster both have the same forward sets, more or less same seam position, and fully stretched out my legs. I'm fully extended. I can barely touch the controls. And so I kind of lean more towards mid sets. I prefer them because they fit well for me, even if I'm slouched over in a cafe racer stance.
Well, if you can't flat foot on a Bobber.
I can flat foot on the Bobber.
I don't know if you should be riding.
Did you ride?
Go tell Deanna that and she'll tell you something.
Well, I know. I mean, Sarah, you know, like we were looking at a lot of different bikes for Sarah. We ended up settling on the CB350 that is still in my garage in pieces. But once we got to the dealership and I was like, sit on this bike, try all these different bikes. She was finally able to flat foot the Bobber. And it didn't really even occur to me. I mean, like, why put somebody on a Bobber right away? Why not put them on a Bonneville? But for a lot of riders, entry levels, and a lot of, I hate to say it, but like sometimes women, they want to feel comfortable flat footing a bike. You know, they don't want to tippy toe a bike.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as odd as it sounds, I think a Bobber would be a good intro level bike too for some people that want that comfort level of being able to flat foot.
And I think that has to do with how you started riding, because I started on dirt bikes, so I'm used to being on my toes.
Right.
I know Steve, you're that way too.
Yeah.
My wife Deanna, she started straight on a street bike. She's always been on that, so she's always liked to flat foot. She's more comfortable that way. Whereas I can have one leg just on the saddle and then one leg completely extended, and I'm comfortable like that.
For our listeners, you might notice a little change in sound. We were inside Rust is Gold and podcasting, and one of the vendors in the collective was moving in, and they had a bunch of equipment that they were moving in the back door, so it was banging around a lot. We had to move out because it was just too noisy. So if you notice a change in audio quality here, we are outside just of the coffee shop continuing the podcast. So you might notice a little change there.
What do you guys think about your bikes? Overall,
you know, I think it's a great bike, and I think it's got a place for somebody who likes that setup. I think they'd be really happy with it. I mean, as far as Triumph design and the way it ran and the power, I think it's a cool bike, man. I like it. I'm glad I rode it. I really am. I think it was a good experience for the Bobber for sure. I'd give it a thumbs up.
Okay, I would say for my Bonneville. Appearance-wise, thumbs up. I'm waiting for the 120 to see what happens when they come out with the 120 here soon. That's going to boost up its horsepower. I'd like to see what that bike felt like with a little bit more horsepower. Aesthetic, great. Feelings, great. For myself, riding for a little bit more experience, I guess you could say, I definitely want to see the T120. For an intro-level rider or mid-style rider, I'd give it a thumbs up, two thumbs up for sure.
You know, it's the same thing with that Threxton. I mean, I prefer, it's personal preference, I prefer the analog stuff a little bit more. But aside from that, my opinion about that aside, that bike's definitely thumbs up. I can't imagine me buying a brand new bike anytime soon, but if I were, it'd definitely be one of those. That's just everything I need. I wouldn't have to mess with it, hop on, press go, or press start and go.
Yeah.
So definitely a thumbs up on that bike.
So for any listeners out there that want to take a look at some Triumph bikes, head out to the Triumph dealership on the west side. Go see Scott. He's the owner. Super approachable. Nice guy. Tell him Rust is Gold podcast sent you. And
Maybe let's ride some other stuff with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he'll let you take the Street Cup out.
Yeah.
You know, the Street Cup's cool, but the one I really want to try next would be the Street Scrambler.
Yeah.
That one is pretty dang cool.
I didn't see that there. Did he have one?
Oh, yeah. It's in there. So it looks just like the T100 Black, but with high pipes. And I have a thing for high pipes. I love them.
Yeah. Sweat pipes.
Yep.
Was that the one that was in red?
I think that one was in red. Tank? Yep.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. I was trying to find, I was looking at the gear. He's got some great gear there.
He does have
gear. I picked up a couple of t-shirts and stuff, and Scott was wearing the wool pea coat. Did you see that?
Oh, gosh. Poor guy.
And it was like
89 degrees for it the DGR warm. Ride. Yep. And I was like, dude, you got to be sweating up a storm in that thing.
And if you noticed, he didn't take it off.
He did not take it off.
Not like,
no, he committed.
Made a few stops, made a few breaks, and he left the helmet on, left the gloves on, left the jacket on the whole time.
It was so hot. It's a great look, though, right? Like, that jacket's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that. Did you see the boots there?
Those boots are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, man, the gloves. I got to say, the gloves I had were awesome. Those are the ones that I picked up from you, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
The grifter
gloves. You gave me those grifter gloves from here because you're... Are you still carrying those?
Yeah, so I still have a couple more pairs left. The ones that I gave you were the denim on the leather.
Which Chris actually likes to call my gardening gloves, by the way.
They look like gardening gloves. No, don't get me wrong, they're comfortable. I put them on, they're great gloves, but they look like gardening gloves to me.
Yeah, I love the denim. I love the denim leather look. I really do.
Yeah, no, they're great.
Yeah, it's cool. Those are great gloves, though.
I wouldn't scoff at them. I wear them.
So that was part of the DJR event, is dressing up and looking nice, wearing your best, your Sunday best. But the other part of it too is, you know, you got to stay safe, right? So a lot of people were wearing their full helmets, good boots, full gloves, things like that. Not something you can really skimp on. I actually, you know, I took a risk. It's not something I like to do, but I was just wearing an old newsboy cap and some old school aviator goggles, and it felt kind of weird, man.
That's right. You did not have a helmet.
I didn't wear
a helmet
this time, which, you know, I like to do that on the outskirts when I'm like on a fly ride outside the city, but I did feel a little awkward not wearing.
Why did you decide to do that? Seriously, I'm just curious.
You know, I don't know. I thought it would kind of be, again, I had my old school racing sweater, like my board tracker sweater. I always liked that look. Being a history teacher, I have a kind of a, I like history, and I like kind of like the old school flat tracker look. You know, those guys were wearing basic leather pants, you know, whatever boots they had, some leather helmets. You know, they were wearing their old aviator glasses. Some of them would wear like old school welding gloves back then, and they would throw on a sweater that said, you know, Harley or Indian or whatever, you know, whoever was sponsoring them, and that was it. And they were hitting these, you know, board track races at 100, 120.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know, it was gladiators. So for me, I just kind of wanted to, I don't know, just try it out, test it out.
I'm so paranoid these days. I wore a 3/4 helmet, which I normally don't. I usually wear a full face helmet, either like the Gringo or the flip up.
I decided to wear my full face that I just got. It's a Simpson knockoff, because I've been eyeballing that Simpson you have over there and your shelf, but I wear a small and that's a medium. So I had to find something to do, and it's a good helmet for now, but it's definitely not a real Simpson. I want to get my hands on sooner or later.
So here's kind of a shout out to the Simpson. I always wear 3/4 helmets, and I bought a Simpson last year. Steve was actually convincing me to get a full face in the winter, and once I got that Simpson, it was a it feels comfortable. Like, it's a comfortable feeling helmet, and you know the ratings are great. You know, if you're going to hit pavement, that thing's going to protect you. It's the most like snug, comfortable feeling helmet I've ever had.
It's got a cool look.
And it does have a cool kind of retro 80s look.
It has that 70s, 80s motocross look.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that flat Darth Vader front makes it look kind of motocross.
And, you know,
it's totally cool.
And the thing that I thought was kind of odd about the Simpson was that it had such a cool look when they were doing those like in the 70s and 80s and, you know, hot rod racing, basically, that like it just kind of disappeared for a while. 90s, 2000s, a lot of the racers were, you know, wearing these more modern helmets, and now they're going back to that kind of cool Simpson look.
Definitely. No, I think Thunderbird Harley over here sells those, and my wife and I were there a few months ago, and I tried one of those on. Same thing. That's why I got seeing yours, and then actually trying it on my side. I fell in love with it. So, definitely, that's. Since it's right by my office, Thunderbird Harley is kind of my go-to to go try on helmets or check stuff out.
So are you secretly, like, eyeballing Harleys?
He is. Did you notice he sneaks in Deanna and her Harley every now and then?
Exactly.
I'm not the one who rides the Harley. It's her. And if you say anything about it, she will tell you something. I know that.
Will.
And I think she
loves
has.
That bike. I think she's told Tyson and I both something.
Oh, it's a legacy bike. It was her dad's first Harley.
We should have those guys and the Indian guys let us demo some of their bikes.
Yeah, definitely.
Seriously. Because the flat track bike that's coming out from Indian.
Indian's new FTR. Yeah, they just unveiled it on the 1st. And it's a little different than what I was expecting from their concept, but I think it has the potential to be just a really hot bike.
I haven't seen it. Is it still super cool? Because the concept bike was awesome.
So the production model does not have high pipes. It reminds me a lot of my Harley XR1200's pipes. They're low, but they sweep up into cans.
It's like a 2-into-1 system, right?
I wasn't the biggest fan of what they changed. And then the tail has more of a Street Fighter look rather than that flat dirt bike looking tail. So, again, a little disappointed on that, but...
But that's stuff you can change out.
Yeah, it's stuff you can change out. There you go.
You know, once they...
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I think the problem... Okay, so the bike that I saw when Franco and I were talking about this, the Flat Tracker 1200 that we saw that looked really cool was the one that Travis Pastrana did that jump on in Vegas, right? Where he did the Evel Knievel.
Well, and that was the actual flat track race bike.
Exactly.
And the FTR 1200 concept was the street bike that was street legal for the concept, and that's the one that they've been showing off.
Hyping up, yeah.
Yeah.
The track bike, though, that's the one that I want to see.
Oh, definitely.
That's the one that I want to ride because, again, it has the upswept pipes that you were talking about that you like. The rear end looks different. The front end looks different. And it just looks more stripped down, kind of dirt bike style. Whereas this kind of looks, to me, like a Street Fighter.
Totally got a Street Fighter look, for sure. But, I mean, it's a good start.
It is.
You know what I mean? You can strip that stuff down.
Oh,
you
definitely.
Can get it down lean and clean.
Well, the great thing about this guy, so they kind of released a little bit of specs for it. That thing, for being an American V-twin, has 120 horsepower.
Wow.
The Triumph, the Thrux I just rode had 97. And so that's an additional 23 horsepower on top of what I rode.
Right.
And so... the big V-twins are always torquey as hell, so that's going to be an interesting ride. I would definitely like to go try that.
We should go try it.
We should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Indian's got a demo day coming up here.
It's on the 26th and 27th of October.
Hopefully it's there by then, because they just unveiled this production model, so we'll see.
Tyson should ride it because he was so disappointed in the way it looks. Let him take it out first.
You're going to take out the dark horse.
Right. Wait a minute. Steve, what?
You get the big cruiser bike.
No, I'm not taking out the big cruiser bike.
So no. you want the small guy on the big cruiser bike then, huh?
Yeah. You said you can stand flat-footed on that.
I never sat on the dark horse.
I'm sure you can.
I'm sure I can, yeah. It's dark horse.
The cool thing about
I'll
the Indian,
it,
too. Come
on.
The
Scout. I'll take the Scout.
Yeah, you take the Scout. I'll take the 1200, and Steven can take the dark horse.
You know, I think it'd be pretty dang hilarious to see me on a big old dark horse. I'm willing to try it.
It's a big bike.
I'm willing to try it.
It is a big bike. But the Indian 1200 retails like around 15, so it's close and it's comparable to the price of the Thruxton.
Man, see, now we just threw a wrench in the machine because I like the way that bike looks. I'd have to ride that, and that might change my mind on the Thruxton.
I'll have to see. Hopefully we can we can get onto that.
Can you finagle Indian to let us demo some bikes next time?
Yeah. Hey, Indian, we're going to be coming and knocking on your door here.
I know a couple guys that hopefully can make that happen. I think we also want to talk to a cool racer that has been doing old school racing from way back in the day, Gary Kyle.
For podcasts? For later podcasts? Yeah.
Yeah, this is the guy who just introduced me over at,
right,
at the DGR.
Yeah, really cool guy.
Very nice man.
Cool bikes. He's at Vincent's... Norton's, I mean, you name it.
What's his story?
He's an old school racer that joined the Air Force in Vietnam, and he did a couple tours over there. But before that, he was a wrencher, and he raced out of Southern California, old flat track stuff.
Cool.
And basically just kept it up throughout his entire life, and he still rides today.
He's local?
He is local now. Well, he's local now, but he moved here from California a while back. He walks with a cane now, so...
Oh, I saw him at DGR.
Exactly.
Right.
But the cool thing is he rides, too, and he puts that cane in between his bonnacle, like right somewhere in the pipes. I don't know where he's
nice.
But he rides
little holster.
He walks with the cane, exactly.
Wow.
And, not bad.
That's a diehard right there.
Yeah, so
yeah, definitely,
I think you guys going to like his story.
Definitely need to talk to him, get his story. I want to know more.
Definitely, yeah.
It's amazing that New Mexico has so many riders. Racers is what I meant. Racers. I met at the Motorado. My buddy Paul was showing off his CB350 little cafe racer to a gentleman. And I glance over and I see Paul pointing at me. I'm like, oh, what's he doing? Why is he pointing at me? And sure enough, this guy has a 1965 Honda CB450 Black Bomber, an incredibly rare Honda. that he needs to get rewired. So Paul pointed me out. The guy went and hunted me down, and I agreed to wire up the bike for him. You know, something that I've gotten pretty good at is wiring bikes. And he dropped off the bike. We got to talking, and he kept mentioning that he races, and finally asked what. And I guess he does desert racing out here in New Mexico. So they do like miles and miles of desert track racing on dirt bikes. And I had mentioned, hey, I've always wanted to get into something like that. And he pretty much just said, you know, next time you're in Santa Fe, give me a call. I'll let you ride whatever. I have a bunch of bikes. I'll let you ride whatever you want, and we'll go out.
Oh, that's rad.
So it's just amazing how many different racers there are in New Mexico.
Speaking of racers, at the DGR event, one of the coolest riders I've ever met, Ernie V. Hill. Caffeine and Gasoline.
Yeah.
Came out and he did some stunt riding on the smallest space possible, probably like 30 feet by 10 feet, right? Parking lot. And this guy was ripping it up. I mean, he was just
unbelievable.
On a Triumph.
On a Triumph. Yeah.
Was it a speed triple?
Speed triple, stripped down.
Yeah.
Tank indented and all that stuff. But the things he was doing on a bike.
In that small of a space.
I've never seen anything like that. No. I've been riding my entire life.
Yeah. It's art at that level, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, it's not just trick riding. It's not doing some wheelies. It's a dance. It's being so in control of your bike at that level that you just, you know how to stop, how to turn, how to get over the bars, how to flip. Just amazing. We're going to post some pictures on the website.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we haven't really been promoting the Russ's Gold Racing website that much, but I want to start putting more pictures up there and some more interviews and stuff with people and some information about the people that we talk to.
Right.
And I think that with Ernie would be awesome that you can actually, I think we have some video too.
We got some video, and I think we should probably get him on the podcast.
Oh, for sure.
He's got a cool story, but like you mentioned, the dance part, I've never seen anybody so fluid and comfortable on a motorcycle.
Yeah,
because I think it wasn't just him doing tricks. You could see the confidence. He knew what space he had, and he used all of it. He came just inches away from the curb every single time, but he didn't flinch. He knew exactly where that bike was going to stop.
In a t-shirt. And sneakers.
Yeah, but he was wearing gloves and a helmet, though.
Tops. And he was wearing a helmet, but there's pictures out all over our Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. You'll see him on the DGR website.
You know, along those lines, you know, for our listeners, you know, we're on all the major podcast outlets now, Spotify, CastBox, iTunes, our own website streaming. We're all over the place. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys. So if you have ideas that you'd like to email us, or even just questions or topics, or you want to make fun of me on the bobber, and you know, or Tyson with his shaved face now,
looks like
a 15-year-old, or Sparky shocking himself. Send us some information. Go to the website. You know, www.rustisgoldracing.com. Podcast is there on the main page. Send us some info. We'd love to hear from you people because we'd like to, you know, gear the podcast toward what you want to hear. So reach out to us. I mean, I know we got some other big podcasts coming up. Is it Lowbrow?
Yeah, we're shooting for Lowbrow. They just got back from Bonneville. We want to talk about that Salt Ghost bike, that Triumph that they actually, again, Triumph, but that Triumph that they took out there and set some records with. They've got a cool kind of blue-collar DIY kind of foundation, so want to get their story. Gary again. Hopefully we can get Ernie V. Hill. We got a lot of people coming up.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up this podcast, right, guys?
Yeah, that's about it. I think we talked about Triumph enough for one podcast.
Yeah, which is surprising because Tyson's the only one that rides a Triumph.
I love Triumph, man. Soon we'll be talking about BMW. Get that in there, Steve.
Yeah.
I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah. Let's talk to Chris Bronstorp over at BMW. He's the service manager there.
Nice guy, man.
Super nice guy. He was at DGR. We'll get with him and get some input from him on some bikes and see what he thinks about Triumph versus BMW.
Okay. Yep. Price tag?
Second mortgage on your house.
Exactly. Yeah. Although they have the R9T over at Scott's Albuquerque Triumph, and he's got it for $9,000.
Does he really? Wow, that is a steal.
Believe me, I didn't sit there for 5 minutes and was like, can I make this work?
Demo it.
Yeah.
Demo it.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. This has been a fun podcast. Check out the website, like I said, for pictures from DGR, Ernie V. Hill's little stunt ride, and some of the other stuff that we've been doing. And hope you all have a good time. We'll talk to you next time.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back. Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA. Been riding all day, leathers on, goggles too, triumphing, not knowing what you want to do. My baby's on a Vincent, has been for quite a while. She said it's rocking just her style.
So let's ride,
so let's ride. Turn up, I got love the cams. American rocker is a matter of fact.